Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Lew Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master Show, a podcast where we explore what it takes to build world-class finance functions. Today, we're tackling a topic that becomes front and center for CFOs worldwide: tariffs, supply chain complexity, and financial resilience. My guest is Thomas Milkopf, Head of Working Capital Management and Treasury at SAP. Thomas was a contributor to SAP Taulia's latest CFO Perspectives report, The Impact of Tariffs on Finance. We'll discuss how global trade tensions are reshaping finance strategies, what CFOs can do to stay agile, and how technology and data are helping businesses plan for the unpredictable. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Anders.
No, it's a pleasure. And obviously, we've worked before on lots of different exciting content pieces. So I thought it was a lot to bring you in here to talk about this latest report, because it's obviously something that CFOs are, of course, they have lived it for a little while now, but it's not really, it's another thing that's not going away. So I think it makes a lot of sense to give some advice and guidance on how to do this. And of course, at SAP Taulia, you have a lot of clients that are dealing with this, so I'm sure also a lot of experience in terms of how to tackle this. So Thomas, let's start with some context. The ebook opens by saying global trade dynamics are shifting faster than ever. From your perspective, how has the CFO's world changed over the past few years?
Yeah, the CFO world, in my view, has become defined by persistent volatility and complexity. So in recent years, CFOs have moved beyond just traditional financial record keeping to become strategic, operational, and of course, what's core to my heart, digital leaders. They are now at the center of navigating constant disruption from the 2008 financial crisis and COVID-19 to the current wave of tariff-driven uncertainty. So the scale of this recent shock, honestly, was quite significant. For example, in April, the US average tariff rate jumped from 2.5% to 27%, with tariffs really ranging from 10% to 50% hitting its main trade partners. So if the last decade was about stability, I would say this one now is really about agility. And CFOs are now the, saying, air traffic controllers of volatility. So the core challenge is no longer stability, but really the agility. And they have, of course, pressure to balance risk, liquidity, and growth in an environment where trade policies, cost structures, and supply chains are constantly shifting. So ultimately, their role has expanded to reorient the entire business to thrive amid constant change.
Yeah, and I really like that analogy of the air traffic controller that you mentioned there, Thomas, because I've not been an air traffic controller myself, but I know it's one of the most stressful professions that you have, right? Because you have to sit there and keep calm under immense pressure because you have planes that are flying all around you. And of course, lives are at stake. Hopefully, lives are not as much at stake for CFOs, but it's an extremely stressful situation to be in, with the world changing as it does, but also the responsibilities that CFOs have, they keep expanding as well. So, you know, what makes this current wave of tariff-driven uncertainty different from like earlier disruptions? You mentioned the financial crisis and COVID-19 yourself. What's different now?
Yeah, for me, it's one word: unpredictability. So that's the key difference. When you look at, unlike the 2008 financial crisis or COVID-19, these were for sure severe shocks followed by a period of stabilization and a clearer recovery path. The current tariff environment has no clear endpoint. So as I mentioned also in the report, with previous crises, companies could eventually understand the situation and then adjust their forecasts accordingly. With tariffs, the biggest challenge is that nobody knows what will happen next as trade policy shifts frequently. This sustained uncertainty is in many ways more intense than past crises. And industries like automotive, which is of course huge where I'm coming from here in Germany, they feel it most. 24% of automotive executives actually reported in a recent KPMG study that their operations is disrupted due to tariffs, which is the highest across sectors. It forces businesses ultimately to plan for multiple possible futures simultaneously rather than recalibrating for a single new reality. And this makes this incredibly difficult for CFOs, especially in publicly traded companies, to provide also forward-looking guidance that the stakeholders expect.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. So I used to work for Maersk, for instance, right? And they have basically also suspended their long-term guidance. They're saying, well, it doesn't make sense to share anything right now because the market is so volatile. And like you said, during the financial crisis and during COVID-19, maybe that was for like a quarter or two. And then companies are like, okay, now we know this is the next normal that we are facing. But right now, you know, it could be changing by the day. And of course, it's really difficult to make decisions like that. But I would say, and that's made my own personal experience at least, is that I would say from maybe late Q3 last year until mid Q2 this year, the uncertainty was extremely high. And then over the summer, some trade deals got struck at least. And while we haven't really seen the effectuation of these deals yet, at least it felt like that uncertainty was lower coming back from summer holidays and companies started to make decisions again. But then every other week almost, new things pop up that kind of puts things back again. I just saw that the index of fear had gone up with 14% yesterday, just based on different, US opening again. And now there's fears around how the number is going to develop. So it's just that crazy volatility we should be getting used to it somehow, right? But it's hard to get used to something that changes all the time. So I guess the old adage of the only constant is change really is true now. So tariffs, obviously, like you said, have reshaped both global supply chains and sourcing strategies and a lot more, of course. How are these changes affecting working capital management and liquidity for CFOs?
Yeah, so what we noticed also in my discussion with customers, these shifts have made working capital management one of the biggest priorities and as well challenges for CFOs. The data shows that a clear realignment in sourcing, for instance, SAP Toya data shows spend in China dropped by 11% over the past year, while it surged in other APEC countries like Taiwan, where we can see it, on our data, it's actually over 1,000% up, Vietnam 500% almost up, Indonesia 200% up. So it really reshaped supply chain, right? And as companies move production or source from these new regions, they face, of course, also transition risk. Many companies are stockpiling goods to hedge against price hikes and supply disruptions, which then, of course, ties up significant cash in inventory and lengthens cash conversion cycles. This creates internal tension because, of course, as a supply chain leader, you want to have security, you want to have higher stock levels to ensure supply, while treasury and finance leaders want to protect free cash flow. So CFOs are now in a tug-of war. Supply chain wants more inventory for safety, finance wants more cash for safety, and balancing the two is the game.
Yeah, and it's always been the game, you can say, right? But because the disruptions are so big, the volatility is so high, what once before was maybe a nice to have, let's just have a little bit more injury, let's just have a little bit more cash. Now it's really a need to somehow have both. And of course, then at the same time, while historically maybe interest rates are not super high, they're at least higher than they were in the decade before. So the cost of having a little bit more inventory, the cost of having a little bit more cash is just much higher. And you see that disrupting entire industries even. Maybe I wouldn't mind being a CFO, but also it's really tough to be a CFO today. How do you really balance these trade-offs? And then we'll get back to that for sure. Mm-hmm. The report also mentions CFOs facing rising logistics costs, so staying on that topic, up to 10 to 15% for many companies. How are the finance teams adapting their planning and cash flow strategies to absorb that, if at all possible?
Yeah, I think overall, I would say, and we see this for a few years now, but finance teams are really leaning into becoming much more agile and, of course, also data-driven. As you said, with the majority of companies experience a 10 to 15% logistics cost increase in 2025, absorbing these shocks requires more than just traditional budgeting. So I think there are several key strategies that are applied by finance teams. One is for sure scenario modeling on a much more sophisticated way. So what if analysis to really test pricing, sourcing, and all the other things and come up with scenarios. Enhanced cash flow forecasting. I mean, let's be also honest. Very often when I talk to CFOs and treasurers and ask them what are they using for cash flow costing, it's very often still old school Excel. And of course, this is getting now in an environment where cash flow is driven by sales, production shifts, etc. So this is quite complex. So your cash flow model also needs much more complexity and ideally also AI capabilities to be really predictive as well. McKinsey said that around 20% of companies are aiming to keep around 20% of their resources liquid to respond to unexpected events. So you want to better make sure that you really know your cash flow and how it's developing. And then, of course, as we discussed before, and this working capital optimization certainly is also a key focus area for finance team. And then I would say the last one I would add is anything around dynamic pricing. So how can you find good ways also, what can you internally absorb versus what you have to pass on to customers, and how do you make it in a way that when the next change come, that basically your price is also changing?
These are some great strategies, Thomas. And then I've also spent a lot of time thinking about this McKinsey best practice of 20% of your resources being liquid. And I think it's important for companies to find ways of saying, well, we need to have liquid resources, but you know, we can't just have 20% of our capital lying there in idle cash. So you need to find other ways of saying, how do we either have, you know, facilities available or work with partners that can help us if we need it in a short term, or of course find investments opportunities for idle cash, because you know idle cash is just expensive these days. So I think it's important for CFOs and then treasury folks to get creative about this, because then you can maybe either transfer some of the risk of having the idle cash to someone else, or you can have that cash make money, even though it's not the core of your business, of course. But this is really what CFOs and treasurers, they should be able to do, I would say. And on the technology part, because I agree, you know, most would resort to Excel, especially if there's new scenarios that they haven't experienced before. But, you know, I was at SAP Sapphire earlier this year and saw some of the capabilities where I'm like, why don't CFOs just get that? And you know, it's not to make an advertisement for SAP as such. Other systems can, of course, also do it. But it's just like you can almost model scenarios with just, you know, pressing the screen a few times, right? Yes. And it's that flexibility, it's that agility that finance teams really need. If they don't get that, then of course it's impossible to do all the scenario modeling that you rightfully say that they need, because otherwise, you know, they're not going to be able to make data-driven decisions with the volatility that we have. So obviously there's a lot of short-term pressure, but how do you see CFOs balancing this short-term pressure with still the need to build long-term resilience in their supply chains?
Yeah, in my view, the smart play here is really a dual track. So it's being agile with a focus on liquidity today and building digital resilience for tomorrow. Like the scenario planning that we were just discussing, like bringing more AI into your processes to also drive automations, etc. Data from the SAP network actually highlights the cost pressure, with 18 companies across key sectors like consumer goods and IT seeing accelerated spend increase by over 100% even between 2024 and 2025. For the long term, they are focused on building resilience. This involves, as I said, digitizing the core processes across finance and supply chain, diversifying supply chains through nearshoring, moving to near regions to reduce dependencies on a single market, and of course, investing in technologies, but also upskilling the teams to shift from manual reporting to strategic analysis and data-driven decision-making, as we just also said. So this balance often creates what the report calls healthy tension inside the organization, requiring integrated data-driven planning to align conflicting departmental priorities, like procurement's desire for inventory buffers and finance needs for cash preservation.
Yeah, and I think like you call it internal tension, but you could also, let's say, flip it around to a positive narrative and say it's in these situations where, at least over the entire course of history, we have shown that then humans, they innovate new solutions, new ways of doing things, and like you say, upskilling as well. So people actually get the capabilities to either use the new technology or be more collaborative with other functions, so that it's not finance and procurement that kind of gets into a fight, but they sit down and find solutions together. Whereas, in the past, they would rarely have a constructive conversation. So hopefully something good will come out of this, while we have to recognize that it's extremely stressful situations out there for many companies still with this volatility. So there are case studies in the report as well, and they show how SAP Taulia is helping companies strengthen cash flow visibility, agility during this tariff disruption. Could you walk us through one of those examples? Because it's always great for the audience to hear some of these practical cases.
Certainly, I'd love to. So one of the great examples is from the report is actually a leading pharmaceutical company that faced significant working capital challenges across its complex global supply chain. The company was struggling with inconsistent payment terms, supplier liquidity pressures, and cost uncertainties, now also driven by tariffs. To address this, they adopted SAP Taulia's global supply chain finance platform, which was integrated with their SAP S/4HANA system. So this solution basically provides them with real-time visibility into cash and working capital KPIs. It offers flexible financing options to their suppliers and helps to standardize payment terms. This was really crucial in helping their supplier also to manage their cash flow and absorb tariff-related disruptions. So at the end, a win-win for both sides. And the results since launching the program in December 2021, were, in my view, quite remarkable. So over 600 suppliers are enrolled, 2.47 billion in invoices were processed, and they achieved a 15-day acceleration and average payment terms. By deploying SAP Taulia, the company transformed its supply chain financing into a resilient data-driven network capable of withstanding global trade volatility.
These are some great results, Thomas, and I really like how it's not just a working capital solution that helps you to manage the process and the tasks and the workflows within, of course, working capital management, but it also looks at the other side and say, what financing options could be available, because typically that's a separate process run by other people. And if the collaboration, even within finance, is not great, then this rarely runs smoothly. So bringing it all into one platform really helps balance some of these pressures that we talked about earlier, the need for cash and the need for more inventory. Well, here's how you find some of these solutions. So I really think that's a great option for companies out there. You've spoken about, and you also did that already here in the podcast, data-driven agility. How are predictive analytics and scenario planning changing how CFOs manage uncertainty?
Yeah, and that's certainly very core to my heart. So top CFOs don't just track the data, they are acting on that data, right? So it's rolling forecasts, digital integrations, AR-based scenario planning, but then also taking the next step and acting on the insights. Instead of relying just on static annual plans, finance teams are now using these tools accordingly. For example, an aerospace manufacturer with over 6,000 unique parts used SAP scenario modeling to evaluate alternative sourcing strategies and avoid delays from tariff spikes. Another example is a Fortune 500 oil and gas company that used SAP Taulia to achieve an 83% growth of its annualized discount rate within just 2 months, giving greater liquidity to absorb cost pressures. And it all started, of course, with the data analysis and then identifying how can you basically further grow the program. As I mentioned in the report, this is also where AI really plays a major role. Companies need advanced planning mechanism that brings together cost control, cash flow forecasting, and strategic agility. So the predictive tools empower CFOs to see the potential impact of a disruption and model a response before it actually happens, which is the key to navigating today's volatile landscape.
Yeah, so let's stay on the AI topic. So I was just reading a recent McKinsey report from November 25 this morning, and just looking to my screen here, it said that 44% of CFOs now use generative AI, and I don't know, there's other AIs as well, of course, for 5+ use cases, but only 5% have a meaningful impact on the P&L. So if we stay on the AI part, where do you see AI having that most immediate impact for finance leaders that you can actually quantify the benefits as well, so that CFOs can showcase, well, we used AI for this process, and as a result, we got a tangible financial benefit?
Yeah, it's a great point. So I think AI now has absolutely the potential to be the heavy lifter, doing 80% of the planning groundwork, so CFOs can focus on strategy. AI is truly transforming, as I said, planning and decision-making from a more manual, time-consuming process into a mostly automated strategic function. As one of our colleagues on the report also said, A.G. Brajan from KPMG, he commented in the report, AI has gone from buzzword to a core planning mechanism that does 80% of this lifting, allowing CFOs to focus on the strategic last 20%. And I personally see three areas really where AI already today can play a big role. It's, as I said, predictive forecasting. There's a lot that can be done there. And as you said, we showcased this at SAP Connect this year. Our AI assistant, Jewel, can even now answer a natural language question, how much cash will we have in the next 3 months, and then do predictive forecasts accordingly, just as one example. Actionable recommendation. Beyond prediction, AI can recommend specific action. For instance, it can suggest triggering dynamic discounting, where 97% of discounts can be captured fully automatically, or activating supply chain financing to optimize liquidity based on its forecast. And then more complex scenario simulation. As I've said, AI enables CFOs to run these complex simulations in integration with all the other departments, production, sales, et cetera, and have a holistic view and on the impact if any decision is made. And then, of course, the other area where I fully believe there's huge potential is automating more day-to-day activities to really give them also, especially in finance. I mean, I know our CFO is also saying we can't grow anymore our finance expense, but our business is growing. So this means we do have a pressure, and I think it's not just true for our company, to automate more tasks so that we can give and free up time for finance colleagues to look at the more strategic task at the same time. We did, SAP Toya did also an analysis earlier this year. We asked, and we even got the result of 32% of companies currently using AI. And I would say it's on us in software for sure. So it's on me and my teams, of course, to explain where AI can help, and also on our product teams to really focus on AI use cases where the value is very easily captured. So I think that is now the next wave. I think there was a lot of excitement in the beginning to get started. And I think now you can really see, for us certainly at SAP, we focus a lot on the areas where we see this can generate value for the CFO.
This is it's great to hear, Thomas, and especially like your commitment as a software vendor to saying, hey, you know, it's on us to help the clients out there to prove the value. Because I talked to a lot of companies, obviously, also, and many of them, of course, are interested in AI. And I'm saying, well, if you have a vendor, you know, today for different systems, which you probably have, you know, you need to go to them and say, hey, you know, where are you on this? What are solutions that I'll be getting, or that it's already available? How do I use this? Or if you're considering a new vendor for different purposes, you know, don't just ask what they can do today, but really, you know, say, what does your product roadmap look like, especially, of course, with AI features? what can we expect? You know, let's say if we implement half a year from now, what new features would we already have at that time? And then a year from now, what can we expect to get? Because with the volatility we are seeing out there, things are changing so fast that the right system today might not be the right system in a year, unless the system provider really is also keeping up. So that's that should be a demand for companies today to the vendors and saying, you know, you need to keep up for my sake, because we don't have the resources, you have the resources, you need to keep up. Where maybe in the past, you know, you could stay in an installation for 3 to 5 years and then maybe make a change. Then came cloud and things started to happen naturally. But now I think companies know that, so they're putting even more pressure on vendors to say, you know, how fast are you actually making changes and updating the features? So, yeah. So I just wanted to add that on the commitment you made. So great to hear that. But if I can just ask maybe a follow-up question on the AI part, because obviously a precondition for succeeding with any of these AI benefit cases is having solid data. What are your clients doing to ensure they actually have solid data to be used for these applications here? Do you have some insights or tips there? Because I know it's something that many companies are still struggling with to this day.
Yeah, certainly. And I must say it's also an area, I would say, it's not very sexy, right? It's a lot of effort, but it's not something that excites anyone. All the data cleansing, but it's necessary. As you said, I mean, you don't have, in my view, you don't have any AI if you don't have clean data. And of course, that's an area where we also at SAP, when we started also with our AI developments, we also noticed that we need to provide better capabilities to our customers. That's where you will hear BDC, Business Data Cloud from SAP came in to really bring all the different data into one data lake, so to say, SAP data and non-SAP data, because at the end, how much worth is your AI if it only looks at one data side, but not your entire enterprise data? So bringing all this data into an easy consumable way without for the end user a lot of effort to get it into this data lake, that's a core part of our strategy, which is why SAP Business Data Cloud is really, in our view, important for our customers to allow them to really have this end-to-end view on their data in an easy way without a lot of IT support, so to say.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great approach, and definitely companies need that. You know, we still talk about master data management challenges with many clients, and I'm like, well, we talked about that 20 years ago as well, and sometimes it feels like we haven't progressed much since then. But the technology has certainly progressed. So I really hope that, you know, with AI as well, because you can also use AI to cleanse your data and get higher quality there, that maybe it can become a self-sustaining improvement cycle, if anything. And of course, at SAP, you have great tools for doing that. So the report's closing chapters talk about business resilience and agility for long-term growth. What lessons have CFOs learned from this recent chair cycles that will shape how they plan ahead?
Yeah, and this one I actually want to start with our previous CFO of SAP, Luka Mucic, which I work quite closely with, if he's listening. So thanks for all your tips you gave me. In every challenge, he said, lies an opportunity. And I would say this one is certainly true for terrorists the current shock. Of course, it's very hurtful, don't get me wrong, but I think they force us in finance to also modernize the tech, break down the silos. So we were talking about different departmental silos and really diversify our supply chains. So the best CFOs use these moments to digitize and invest in people and create a new normal of real-time data-driven decision-making. And that's, of course, where we then also want to help companies not just survive, but really thrive with the data-driven insights that then can generate the right actions versus just standing still. And then, of course, my second lessons learned, I would say, is cash is king. This is not really new, but I see that leading companies develop a very cash-conscious culture, where not only finance cares about free cash flow, but the entire organization. I can tell you this is certainly true and has changed over time at SAP. So now everyone in our own organization is very much also looking at cash flow. The real advantage comes when, as I said, every function looks at this and embeds cash awareness into decision making. So it's not just finance who at the end says, oh, but we need to look at the cash. As mentioned previously, McKinsey has found that successful companies maintain around 20% of their resources as liquid assets to enable this kind of flexibility. And then, so my third lessons learned is, of course, technology as an enabler, but the biggest challenge is often cultural. So with AI adoption, finance still at a very early stage. So I cited before 32%, I think you said 44%, according to the other reports. CFOs must lead the charge in driving a mindset shift toward digital adoption, investing in upskilling and demonstrating how new tools like AI really empower employees rather than replaces them. And finally, I say they have learned to focus on what they can control. In a world of geopolitical and economic uncertainties, CFOs are looking inward to modernize data infrastructure, digitize processes, and diversify supplier relationships to build a more resilient operating model.
Those are some great lessons. And I think, you know, just a couple of comments to that, Thomas. So on the AI part, so we released an ebook called Finance 2035, where we said, okay, if you wanted to create a vision, and you can, of course, create that vision already today, what would that vision statement be? And we said, think AI first to realize the human potential of your finance function. Because we should be thinking AI first with every challenge we encounter, with every process that we're running, and seeing how can we leverage AI to do this better. And of course, we should also do that in a holistic sense. So instead of thinking first to do all sorts of other things to the issues that we're encountering, we say, okay, let's embrace this digital or AI mindset and say, okay, AI, not probably, AI can solve this. So let's investigate how. And of course, it might be it's too expensive to do it and there's other challenges by all means, but this should be our mindset, thinking AI first, how to solve these problems. And then about the point you said about cash flow being on the mind of the whole company, it reminded me of, I think it was Philip Kotler, the sales and marketing guru. Mm-hmm. He said that, you know, the sales department is not the whole company, but the whole company better be the sales department. So we could almost say that, you know, treasury is not the whole company, but the whole company better be the treasury department, right? So that we're all thinking 100%. Around cash and how to use our capital in the smartest possible way, because this is what unlocks new opportunities or have the resources available to mitigate these risks that we're now seeing with the new tariff environment. So while it may be stretching a little bit too far on behalf of the treasury function, I think it could be a nice maybe tagline for someone out there to use. So final question, Thomas, before we round off. So on hashtag Finance Master Show, we define a finance master as someone who helps build world-class finance functions. So Thomas, how does your work at SAP Taulia helped CFOs achieve that goal in today's volatile environment?
Yeah, I would say my role at SAP and SAP Taulia is about putting CFOs in the driver's seat, not just for treasury or working capital, which certainly is my biggest focus, but ultimately for the entire finance function. In today's turbulent world, CFOs need more than just dashboard. They need real-time intelligence and tools that drive action. At SAP, my mission is to bridge that gap between insight and execution. We bring together basically predictive analytics, intelligent automation, and then end-to-end solution that gives really the CFO the agility to turn uncertainty into an opportunity, whether it's optimizing liquidity, managing risk, or making smarter investments. For example, our platforms integrate finance, procurement, and supply chain, so leaders can literally see around corners and act faster than competition. One Fortune 500 customer saw a fourfold jump in supplier participation after optimizing with our solution, which directly translated into more resilient and more efficient value chain. And that, I think, sets SAP also apart, how we connect the dots from high-level strategy to day-to-day operation, giving always the CFOs the levers to unlock cash, improve forecasting, drive compliance, and build partnership across the enterprise. So ultimately, I would say my work is about raising the bar for what finance can do, making sure CFOs have the infrastructure, insights, and confidence to lead from the front in any environment.
And this is exactly what finance masters do, Thomas. They keep pushing the boundaries because, you know, it's all relative, right? World-class today is not world-class tomorrow, at least not if you're doing the same thing, because it's always a moving target. And I know you guys, you are keep pushing the boundaries as well. And it's really exciting to see some of the capabilities coming out there. So Thomas, this was hugely insightful. And of course, we'll put the new report, The Impact of Terrorism on Finance, in the show notes as well, so people can download that. I also had the pleasure of sharing some quotes and insights for the report too. But Thomas, if people want to get in contact with you or SAP or SAPtolia, what's the best way to do that if they want to learn more about, you know, the report or the solutions, or how we can help them?
I mean, ultimately, of course, have a look at the report, contact us there, but happy, just reach out to me as well. You will find me on LinkedIn, Thomas Mayakov. Very easy. I'm very approachable, and I look forward to hearing from many, of course. I love that exchange.
Great. So also my recommendation here to reach out to Thomas as well. So Thomas, once again, thanks a lot for being on the show. It's been hugely insightful. I really recommend everyone to read the report as well. And to all the listeners out there, thanks a lot for tuning in this week. Without you, we wouldn't be doing this. So I really appreciate you spending the time here as well. So with that, hope to see you again next time. And see you out there. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.